You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Usually every year we alternate, and she gets to pick where we go, and then I get to pick where we go. And, of course, I'm always going to pick to go to Green Bay because there's really nowhere else I want to go.
For the 12th year in a row, Green Bay?
Yep.
Yep.
She wanted to go on a cruise, and I'm like, we don't need to go no freaking cruise. We'll just go out there again.
Go on a cruise of Lake Michigan or...
Yeah, the Edelweiss cruises. You're set. There you go.
Check New York Bozo! New York Bozo! New York Bozo!
I'm going to go so angry Jim Rome on you, Brian. It's going to be ridiculous.
Jordan made some good points, and that was cute.
Who, me?
Well, you're real handsome. Your eyes look real nice today in that jersey, Brian. Tell you that right now.
And bring you some more devastation and more knowledge and more fun facts about...
Did you just promise
tonight
that we're going to go devastate all of our listeners?
Good evening, Packer Nation. Welcome back to another edition of Pack to the Future podcast. As always, I am your host, John Jameson, and man, it is good to be back. You guys probably have missed my voice so much. Well, here I am in the voice flesh speaking to you back again. Everyone's so excited. I can hear it in your listening ears. And guys, joining me tonight, Brian Fonfara,
hello,
Coach Club. We're all here tonight and we're bringing it to you guys. And guys, this comes at just a perfect time because there's some Packer news coming out that's not draft related. Woo. And there's a lot to get to tonight. So let's cut with the chit chat. I love that intro. And Brian, tell me how you're doing.
I'm doing great, John. It's awesome to have you back. Awesome to not have to host the episode. I'm happy.
I am happy as well because, you know, it becomes at this point, it's almost an addiction where it's like, you know, sometimes you just stay away a little bit, but it'll always bring you back. And when you're back, oh man, you're on cloud nine. And anytime I'm talking Packer football with you guys, it is cloud nine. Promise
pump
you that
Pack to the Future directly into your veins, John.
We are Pack to the Future. You know what else is there to say? We are Pack to the Future. So guys, just a little insight. We always joke about how many times I say we are Pack to the Future at the end of an episode. It's become a thing, and it is one of the best things of all time. So
it's worth sticking around to the end of the episode to hear. It is.
For those three people that stick around at the end of an episode, it is very enjoyable for them.
We got to start giving away free t-shirts to anybody that can correctly report the number of we are Back to the Future as John throws at the end.
But that means that I have to count, and then it's just going to make it super difficult. But hey, we'll make something happen. But yeah, it is good to be back, Brian. It's good to hear your voice. Glad to hear things are well. And Coach, let's bring you in. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I've listened to the podcast. Even before I started writing for the website, I'd always listen to the podcast. I'm like, you know, that'd be pretty cool to get on there to kind of, you know, give some ideas, some of them unpopular, but, you know, ideas nonetheless. And so,
yes, sir.
You know, it's good to be here. I always kind of imagine it like, you know, I'm a big fan of the Gruden's QB camp. You know, he was a former coach. He got fired. And then he goes on there and talks football and rants and raves and that's kind of what I imagined it whenever I go on one of these deals. So we'll see if we can make it happen.
You're the defensive side of Gruden's football quarterback camp. That's what
exactly.
You are.
Instead of Spider 2Y Banana, it's Dog Rush 1. That's my stuff.
Right there. There you go. All right, Ben. Well, since Ben, you brought up John Gruden, and I know you're a huge fan of his. I have to get your thoughts on him being asked about bringing analytics into the game in Oakland. And he said, no, that he wants to bring the game back to 1998. Ben, it's 2018. Why does he want to bring the game back to 1998?
It's doable.
Uh, That's a good question. You know, I remember 98. I was 5 years old. So, you know, I don't know. I really don't know what he was thinking. The game has progressed so much since then, especially offensively with the evolution to spread offense, the read option. They even got some triple options some teams are running. The run-pass options, that wasn't there in 98. So, right. You know, and you kind of need those analytics to game plan to get a better feel for guys. So I'm pretty confident, though. I'm gonna be rooting for Gruen to do well. So I don't know. I think he will do well.
I can't imagine being a Raiders fan right now and thinking, okay, we're bringing in a former Super Bowl winning head coach, but the downside here is that he hasn't been in the game for a decade. So, like, is he going to be able to adjust? Is he going to understand what the NFL today is? And probably just around the time they started to reassure themselves, he brings it back an entire another decade. And they're like, oh, well, maybe not. What do we do?
Now, when you said that you were rooting for Gruden, I mean, is that something that you wanted to pepper into the podcast at some point? Ben,
yeah, you know, you got to get a little plug in there.
I mean, that should be a t-shirt. I know we've tried to come up with t-shirt ideas on this podcast before, but rooting for Gruden is like that just flows. But yeah, you are a defensive side of the ball kind of guy, and before there's a lot of the news coming out right now is on the defensive side of the ball. But before we kind of talk about, you know, potential guys that are coming, that could be coming to Green Bay, we're going to talk about the people that are already here, specifically our new defensive coordinator, Mike Pettine. And I just kind of want to get your insight as to what kind of defense you think he's going to be bringing into Green Bay, and, you know, what is going to be separating him from, you know, a Dom Capers defense, and just get us all excited about having Mike Pettine here in Green Bay.
Right. And you know, in the off season, he was a guy that was just, you know, off the radar. I don't think anyone really expected him to be the next defensive coordinator of the Packers. Like, you know, I sure as heck didn't expect him to come in. But, you know, I'm excited. And, you know, when you look at his defense, there's a lot of similarities with Dom Capers, and then there's a lot of differences. I think some of the biggest differences come from base personnel with your three down defensive linemen and four linebackers and four defensive backs. Dom Capers would always like to shade a guy. He'd always have a guy in a three tech outside shade of the guard. He'd always have a guy in a five tech the other end outside of the tackle. Both those guys shaded to make things easier for gap control. And Mike Pettine likes to put his ends in four techs or head up with the tackle. And, you know, I went back and watched every defensive play from 2011, 2012 when he's with the Jets. And a lot of times when he runs with base personnel, he's in an Oki look or a head-up look, whether it be moving an end and a nose over the guard in two techniques and then playing with three linebackers or, you know, in his Oki look or the head-up four-tech look that he runs. But, you know, I think there's advantages to playing head-up. With his ends, he likes to pinch him inside to play the B gap, and then his outside linebackers were forced to play back in. That's kind of the same with Dom Capers. He's a force guy. He was all sold out for the force technique instead of spilling it. You know, some guys like to spill it. They like to get the ball carrier running towards the boundary, and it's more prevalent with 4-3 guys or, you know, in the college game with the 4-2-5 guys. But I like the head up look personally, because I think it offers, brings a lot to the table as far as confusing the offensive tackles. It's unpredictable. One thing that I liked, about Dom Capers that is a little bit different than Mike Pettine is that Dom Capers was very good at, confusing the offensive line. He liked a lot of pre-snap motion. He liked a lot of moving around, but his guys knew what gap they was playing. And sometimes they were out of position because in some fronts there was a two-gap scheme, which Mike Pettine he has some fronts he likes to play, two-gap. But Dom Capers, I thought, was him and Dick LeBeau, really, you know, what he came from He was a Dick LeBeau disciple, and they both thrived off of pre-snap motion. You know, we all remember the psycho defense. Some people hated it. I kind of liked it. But and Dom Capers would nickel and dime teams to death kind of with that look to try to roll with five or six defensive backs to counter, you know, four and five receiver sets, which you kind of had to. In today's NFL, with how much they throw the ball, you almost have to play nickel and dime that much. Mike Pettine's kind of the same way in the sense that he likes to play a lot of nickel. He likes to play a lot of dime. But the biggest difference in those nickel and dime looks really is what he does up front, playing head up. And he likes to put all his front four guys in a three-point stance, which I noticed was a little bit different, instead of stand them up, where Dom Capers would drop one of those outside linebackers and rush an inside linebacker. Mike Pettine will usually send both outside linebackers and rush four. So you basically know which four guys he's sending. You know, I don't think it's too predictable. Even if you know who's coming, even if you know those four guys are coming, you got to stop them. And so Mike Pettine plays a lot of line games up front. He'll twist them where he sends the outside linebacker through the B gap, and he'll have the two technique or three technique be the new force man, and he'll twist to the outside. He plays, and when it comes to coverages, a lot of these guys are the same. A lot of 3-4 guys will play 3 deep. It just rolls best with what you do up front. But Mike Pettine plays a lot of cover 4, which we hardly ever saw from Dom Capers. He likes to be aggressive and play press man techniques, bump and trail techniques. Dom Capers didn't like that. He preferred 3 deep or cover 6. Mike Pettine likes to run a lot of split field coverages where he's playing quarters coverage or cover 4 to one side. He's playing cover 2 on the backside, or he'll play cover 1 on one side and he'll play cover 2 on the backside. So that's the biggest differences in the secondary. But I like Mike Pettine. He has a good track record, great track record in New York and in Buffalo. And I saw a couple of talks that he gave at clinics. And he is one of the smartest defensive coordinators, I think, in the game. So, I'm happy to have him in Green Bay.
Man, some of those terms you were throwing out there in coverages, I am just like, that's a thing. That was very good.
Weird to hear a podcaster talking about routes.
Routes. That's awesome. I mean, Ben, I've been hearing people saying that, you know, an inside linebacker is a position of need on the Packers. And do you feel this way? Like, why is an inside linebacker a position of need right now for this defense?
One thing that I firmly believe is that you almost can't have enough inside linebackers. And it's the most important position in football, especially in a 3-4, because your inside linebacker is basically the quarterback of your defense. He's the guy that sets the huddle. He's the guy that gets the front moving where they need to move. He makes the coverage checkoffs. I mean, he's doing everything. So, and one thing about the position is that these guys almost are more apt to get injured. When you're playing, 60 snaps a game, it takes a toll on your body. You need a guy who can roll in there. And with some of these fronts that Mike Pettine does run, he can use multiple inside linebackers at times. You know, there's in short yardage situation, 3rd and 3 or 3rd and 2, sometimes he'll roll with an extra big body in there, what he calls a big Oaky look or a heavy Oaky look, where they bring in another guy. So I think with what Dom Capers was doing, where when they go nickel or dime, you only have one inside linebacker, it's going to take a toll on him. And Blake Martinez, he played a lot of snaps. It's just kind of a position, I think, really, where the more the better almost, because you can get fresh bodies in there and you can rotate these guys in there, keep them healthy and kind of bounce ideas off each other. So, that's to me, I've always believed that. Some may disagree, but that's kind of where I stand on it anyway.
You think Pettine would just throw in, say we draft a inside linebacker, first or second round, is he going to throw them, straight into the fire, would you say?
I think they would get a number of snaps. You know, we saw early when Martinez and Ryan was playing, almost when they're younger, when they get in there, the better, because sometimes throwing them into the fire is the best way to teach them. I think, you know, more experience they get, even if it doesn't look mm-hmm. good, it doesn't look good on tape, it's going to help them in the long run. So, you know, I would say so, yeah.
And what are your overall thoughts on the inside linebackers in this draft?
You know, for the most part, when looking at these guys, I think there's a lot of third and fourth round kind of guys. There's, you know, a couple of guys that really stand out when you look at their film. They really get you excited. But for the most part, I think a lot of these guys are going to be pretty average. I think that they could be backups for a number of years. It kind of reminds me of when Manti Te'o came in a few years ago, and he was a great inside linebacker at Notre Dame. And Bob Diaco, his defensive coordinator, runs a great 3-4, and now he's at Nebraska, I believe. But he was a prominent inside linebacker, and he was actually came in like second or third for the Heisman voting. And, you know, they was pumping him up. They thought he was going to be one of the best, and then he just kind of was a little average there. He had couple of good years at San Diego. Now he's in New Orleans. So that's kind of how I see a lot of these guys. Maybe is you know, they're good linebackers, but I don't think they're going to stand out to anybody. Maybe a couple of them, but you know, I don't see any instant, you know, first year Pro Bowlers or anything like that.
Okay. Now, are there any linebackers in this draft? Like, just throw out some names out there of players that you think would completely just fit into this defense that we got right now?
Well, you know, starting off, my favorite linebacker, my favorite inside linebacker in this draft is Rashawn Evans from Alabama. And, you know, one reason I think that he would fit in really good in Petten's system is that, well, for one, he played in a 3-4 defense at Alabama. And this might be, you know, some people may not like this, but, you know, just because he went to Alabama almost, is why I think he has a leg up on some of these guys. You know, he has a couple mm-hmm. championships under his belt. He has experience. And, you know, you look at these Bama prospects going into the NFL, they have a lot of success. I mean, even at the Packers, you know, despite the year that he had this year, Clinton Dix early on in his career did some really good things. He turned a lot of heads. Like I said, he had a down year this year, but they brought in, they drafted Eddie Lacy when he came out of Bama. He had a really good first year. I thought he was going to be the real deal. So Lacy gave us a couple of good years. You look at other guys across the league, you know, Julio Jones, Barrett Jones, a great offensive lineman. So Bama brings a lot to the table. I've always called them the 33rd NFL team. So guys. But Evans, just go back. If you go back and look at the tape when he played Tennessee, alone was enough to sell me on him. I think he is the best blitzer in this inside linebacking group. And you know, a lot of the times he would be stunting through that the B gap, or they'd send him off the edge from the inside, from, you know, 4.5 to 5 yards deep, and he'd be right in the quarterback's face. He's a little bit undersized. But, you know, I think he could fit in real well. He kind of reminds me of, you know, whenever Joe Thomas was early in his career, he, you know, he was in talking about physical size. But, I think he's the best coverage linebacker in this draft as well. Bama played a lot of cover three, which we see in the NFL with a lot of 3-4 teams. They played a lot of man defense, and he can man up on that back in a one back set, or he could play over the tight end and he could run with the tight end. And playing these SEC offenses, some of them are very similar to what we see in the NFL. When you get away from, you know, the Texas A&Ms of the world or Missouri, a lot of these SEC schools are playing these professional offenses. So I really liked him. I think you know, he'll probably fall maybe the second day. But, you know, if I was somebody, I would take a chance on him because he looks like a really good prospect. One of my other favorite ones is Roquan Smith out of Georgia. Again, another SEC guy. And he was the favorite inside linebacker for a lot of guys that I saw. And he performed well at the combine. He did decent. And, you know, another guy with some championship experience. Yeah, Georgia fell this year. They probably should have won it. He played great against Oklahoma and against Baker Mayfield, who eventually won the Heisman Trophy. You know, he was the best. I had him as the best spy linebacker whenever they're playing a cover one. And the back stays in the block and he has to mirror the quarterback. He has to spy the quarterback. He could track him well. And he took great angles to the ball carrier every single time he plays downhill. He has great physical size and he's flexible enough where if you needed to, you could play him on the edge. He has, you know, been a leader of that defense for a number of years. And he's another guy that brings a lot to the table. So, you know, those two guys are off the bat. It was real close to decide between which one I really thought was better. But those are the two guys I really think is going to stand out and guys that I would have to take a chance on.
I feel like you can't go wrong drafting SEC. I mean, the talent that they get in those schools and the coaching down there, I mean, these guys are pretty much NFL-ready players, and it's just how their game develops in the NFL. But Brian, are there any linebackers that you'd like to maybe add to what Ben just gave us?
Ben's the expert here. He's definitely gone deeper than I have. I would just echo what he said about Roquan Smith. Like, that might be my one inside linebacker I wouldn't mind seeing in the first round. Everything, Ben, that you just described about him just sounded like everything that this defense is missing. Just downhill guy.
So dreamy.
Think about it. Somebody who takes good angles at a runner, somebody who is relentless getting the runner, a strong tackler, a big force in the middle. He's quick, he's strong, he's just everything that I think the middle of our defense is missing. So yeah, I would just echo everything you said about Roquan Smith and more. But yeah, I don't really have anybody to add to that. No.
I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on? Go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, I just wanted to put an asterisk in there and say that I'm not an SEC homer or anything. A lot of guys are SEC homers out there. I'm actually a fan. I like the Big 12. I'm a Big 12 kind of guy, you know.
Are you an Oklahoma fan?
Yeah, I would say so. Being from Oklahoma, you're almost obligated to root for the Sooners.
Okay,
so. I'm not an Oklahoma State fan, though. Don't get it twisted or anything.
How are you guys? What are you guys' thoughts on Shaquem Griffin? I mean, you guys feel like, what are your thoughts on him? I'm just going to put it that way. Huge combine.
It would be unprecedented to bring in a guy with one hand. I wouldn't be shocked if we went undrafted and then tried to pick his own team from there. But at the same time, that combine
is nuts.
Any doubt of whether or not this guy could play, it has to be kind of out the window after that combine. He's incredibly fast. Like, he ran the same 40 time that his defensive back of a brother did a year ago. So you would think that's enough speed for a linebacker. Watching him catch balls even with one hand, like, he was doing it. He was kind of like trapping it with his wrist on the missing hand and then grabbing it with the other hand. I don't know how many dropped interceptions that would lead to or how many passes that another linebacker would have tipped, but he didn't quite have the reach to get there. So I have no doubt that he can play and that he can go get tackles and that he can knock some dudes around. The question mark does come in, though, with those. That's a tip that's a pass that should have been tipped, but he doesn't have the reach for it. Or, you know, there was a guy running to his left side and he tried to reach out and tackle him, but he didn't have a hand to grab onto him with. So I'm sure that'll be on the minds of a lot of GMs, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody gave him a chance.
No, absolutely. I don't think you can deny what he did at the combine. And people have had phenomenal combines and, you know, not panned out, but It just, I think it goes to show that this kid has insane heart to make it where he's gotten in his football career. And you know, I truly hope the best for this kid, but I figured that was something that I just want to throw out there, because that was probably the biggest story of the NFL Combine. And go get it, Shakeem. That was you put in your work, bud. I'm hoping it pays off.
Back to the Future is brought to you by Handmade by Heroes, officially licensed NFL, NBA, NCAA, MLB, and NHL products, as well as golf, medical, and U.S. military branch accessories. You can even have your own design, custom made, all handmade by U.S. military veterans. Paracord bracelets, keychains, lanyards, and more, each handmade by a hero. Visit them online at handmadebyheroes.com. Use promo code PACK for free shipping on your next order. Handmade by Heroes, empowering our nation's veterans.
But we are going to keep it rolling here, and we're going to open this up for our Twitter questions here. And we got a couple coming in from you guys. So let me, oh my gosh, I just lost the page. And this is embarrassing, but I'm back. Don't take weeks off, guys. That's the moral of the story. Do not take weeks off. What is your, here's a question. It's from Nate Clark at Coach Nate 71 on Twitter. His question is, what's your ideal offseason for the Pack, free agent wise and draft approach? So Brian, I'll let you kick this one off, and then Ben will come at you.
The dream scenario for me, I'll start with defense, will be to attack the front seven. I've been preaching this nonstop over the last few off seasons. If you're a faithful listener to the show, you'll know after every front seven draft pick we've made in the last couple drafts, you have heard me just elated, and not just because like, oh, I think this player is going to be really good. It's a player for the front seven. I'm obsessed with it. It's the place that you win in defense. You have to start in the trenches. You have to stop the middle of the field, and you can't do that without a good front seven. And that includes inside linebackers, which is a position that Ted Thompson did not address effectively. Like, he got Blake Martinez, but that was a fourth round pick. That was kind of an anomaly. Like, he didn't spend a high pick on it since, I don't know, AJ Hawk. So I'm hoping that Gutekunst will value that position. I'm hoping that he'll value defensive line and edge a lot more than Ted Thompson's regime did. And instead of going for cornerbacks after cornerback after cornerback, he'll address that front seven and let his cornerbacks improve. So that's my dream. We're going to talk in a little bit about Muhammad Wilkerson. I think that would be a really strong start. Harold Landry in the draft is a guy I really like. We just talked about Roquan Smith as a guy I'd really like. I would just really like to see that front seven attacked. Offensively, I mean, in a dream scenario, you're seeing pay cuts for at least Jordy Nelson. I think Aaron Rodgers has made it clear that he wants Nelson and Cobb back. So to talk about those two getting cut, or either one of them getting cut, I don't think it's going to happen. But if either of them or both of them would rework their deals, open up some cap space for us to address some of these other needs, that would be incredible. Tight end is a huge one. I'd love to see a day two pick at tight end. But I think you need more. I think you need a free agent at that position as well. Tight end isn't a position where you very often see rookies come in and just dominate. So you kind of need a year or two at least for a tight end to come in and figure out the NFL and figure out his place in it. So I'd love to see an outside free agent, an Austin Seferian Jenkins or Trey Burton, or, you know, some people are even mentioning Jimmy Graham. I'm not sold on that, but just as an example, I think you need a veteran in, and Aaron Rodgers will thank you for it. And then, of course, Aaron Rodgers getting his extension. Reports came out last week that it was all but signed, and he was just waiting for Kirk Cousins to sign his contract. That might That might add a couple more million per year, depending on what Kirk Cousins signs for. But this is going to be a rich contract for Aaron Rodgers. He deserves it. He has earned it time and time again. I'm very excited at the idea of him being able to finish out his career in Green Bay, and I'm all for it. Let's get him signed. So I would say that more or less sums up my ideal offseason.
Ben, what is your ideal offseason for the Packers?
Well, you know, first of all, I kind of want to echo what Brian said about the front seven. You know, I agree wholeheartedly because, you know, I can't think of a defense that hasn't, you know, every successful defense has a good front seven. You know, one position especially, I think, that's been on the minds of a lot of fans is the outside linebacker position. You know, we need we got Clay Matthews. And Clay Matthews is you know, he brings a lot to the table. But, you know, you need someone to also play that weak side spot. And I think that'll be addressed in the draft. I hope so. But – and then, you know, as we were talking about earlier, inside linebackers – you know, we have two really good inside linebackers, you know, don't get me wrong, but, you know, like I said earlier, that's just kind of where it all starts. You know, I don't know if they're going to go out and try to find somebody to fill some of these voids, or maybe it'll be filled through the draft. And then, you know, also like Brian said, the tight end position, I think that there is a number of good tight ends, coming up in this draft. One guy in particular that, I've been pretty high on is Mark Andrews from Oklahoma, who, you know, he in their offense, he played the number three spot a lot as a detached tight end, which I think would translate well to what Mike McCarthy wants to do. You know, he ran a lot of hitches, a lot of comebacks, a lot of outs. You know, he can run the seam. He's a quick guy. And he can be the attached tight end playing right beside the tackle there. And you know, block down on those linebackers on some of the inside traps and zones that McCarthy likes to run. But, yeah, you know, I just agree wholeheartedly with what Brian said, because really, you know, in my mind as well, those are, you know, some of our biggest concerns and things that I hope to get filled soon.
And we're gonna kind of morph this Twitter question into rumors that have been popping up. Not rumors, but Muhammad Wilkerson is coming into Green Bay tomorrow to sit down with Mike Pettine and Brian Gutekunst, and they're going to try and work something out here and potentially bring a very solid defensive lineman into Green Bay. And I'm excited about it, but we do have a Twitter question that's going to kind of morph into, you know, your guys' thoughts on, you know, if you guys want Muhammad Wilkerson to come in or not. But the question essentially is from Rootkiss, Rooktiss, Rooktiss, Rooktiss.
He's hearing you struggle with this. It's awesome.
At Rooktiss on Twitter. And he's replying to one of our writers, Thane. He wrote up on Muhammad Wilkerson coming here. And he says, right, cool. But where does he play and who sits? So, Brian, we'll start with you. Do you want Mo Wilkerson in Green Bay? And how does he fit? How does he fit in with this team? So, without further ado.
I could not possibly be more pro-signing Wilkerson than I am. I am all in on this idea. He had a Pro Bowl year, his best season in year two, working under Mike Pettine. Pettine knows him. He knows Pettine. And if there's anybody in the NFL that can get Muhammad Wilkerson back to his best, it's Mike Pettine. And I have absolutely no doubt about that. This is a very, very highly talented defensive lineman. He can rush the passer. He can stop the run. He can do it all when he has the mind to. And I think that a move away from a larger city, a move away from a Jets organization that you've seen guys kind of falter out of a lot over the past decade or so. I think he could come here and just bounce right back, have a really big season, and set the tone for that front seven. Because if you have a defensive line that's that good and that deep, your linebackers get to just do whatever they want. Like, go look back at those like Steelers defenses of the 2000s and the Ravens defenses of the 2000s. They built defensive lines, you know, Haloti Ngata, Brett Keisel, just opening things up for linebackers. Linebackers that sometimes went on to other teams and didn't really do much because they were masked. Their weaknesses were masked by having just that good of a defensive line. And that's the kind of line you could be talking about in Green Bay. As far as who sits, nobody. Nobody sits. It's a rotation. It's, you know, think about offenses these days. Like, it's all about keeping your offense on the field and wearing down a defense. And if you can give Mike Daniels, you can give him an entire drive off probably from time to time and just let Muhammad Wilkerson take some snaps. And you've got fresh legs, fresh defensive linemen setting the tone for the rest of your defense for an entire game. That's huge. You know, we have talent at the position. We have Daniels, we have Clark, we don't know quite what we have in Montrevious Adams. I'm interested to see what he can do after getting a training camp under his belt. We've got Dean Lowry, a favorite of mine, a good pass rushing defensive lineman. But you can't ever have too much talent up there. Like, the Jets went through a phase where they drafted first round defensive linemen like three times in 6 or 7 years. You saw how good that Steelers offensive or defensive line was. You know, they had Casey Hampton and they had Brett Keisel, and they still spent a first round pick on Hayward like a year after the Super Bowl, 2 years, something like that. It's a position that you can never address enough. And this would be a very talented guy to come in and rotate. So nobody has to sit. Nobody's going to get benched for it, you know, but it's just going to up the entire play of the defense in my mind, because you're starting up front where you need to.
And Ben, your thoughts on Mo Wilkerson and where he fits into this defense?
Well, you know, I've been waiting on something that I could disagree with Brian about, and we've come to it here with Mo Wilkerson. You know, I don't know all about the money aspect of it, the salary cap, you know, anything like that. But, you know, the one thing that I always look at is just to go to the tape, go to the film. And, you know, I watched a few of his games from 2017. I got into a number of them, and I really didn't care for what I saw. You know, well, he was really good at playing the run, I will say. A lot of times they had in the three technique, and he would squeeze a gap down real well, and he would find the ball, and he'd play the run extremely well. But when it comes to rushing the passer, I was, you know, less than impressed with the way that he got after the quarterback. And, you know, a lot of it could be due to the scheme, because they would loop him a lot, and he just played way too tall. He was standing straight up, showing the numbers. And when you do that, you just ask him to get cut blocked. And, you know, that happened a number of times. I didn't like how tall he played. He's been in, you know, had a number of disciplinary issues that he had with the Jets. You know, I get that, you know, maybe it makes some decisions that aren't wise at times. But is that a guy that you don't want to take a risk on, you know? And I think maybe as Packer fans, we might have been spoiled watching guys like Mike Daniels play the position, because when Mike Daniels plays the position, the three technique, he comes out low. He uses leverage. He uses strength. He gets after the quarterback, and he forces bad throws. I just didn't see that with the Wilkerson. So I don't really think it's worth the risk and the money to spend on the guy. You know, I don't want somebody who's going to come in and, you know, be a distraction to the team. You know, we look at, and I almost hate to bring this up, but when you look at Martellus Bennett, when he was signed, you know, that was a guy, I'm like, this guy, he's going to be a major distraction, and he was. He caused a lot of turmoil, maybe in the locker room. You know, we don't know everything that goes on behind closed doors, but, you know, it caused a lot of issues, I think. And, you know, when we bring in these guys, these high-profile guys, and, you know, I don't know how they're going to fit in the locker room. I don't know how he's going to fit with the team. He has shown some – he had some good seasons early on. You know, he went to two Pro Bowls – or, well, he went to one Pro Bowl in 2015, and he did play for Mike Pettine, so he does have a leg up there. But, you know, I think maybe he's better suited to be a nose tackle than he is to play a 3 and a 5 technique. I think Mike Daniels is the ideal guy to play that position. I think Wilkerson would be a good nose tackle. I think, you know, to occupy the center and play both of those A gaps, I think he could do real well. And, you know, you're not asking him to get after the quarterback like you are from a defensive end position or an outside linebacker position. When it comes to like nickel situations, when they played him in a three in the other end, outside of the guard there in another three, he didn't do well there. I didn't see. You know, he seemed to just lack in the pass rush. When it comes to getting double teamed, he didn't take on a double team too well from what I saw in the last season. So I wouldn't take a risk on him. But you know, when it comes to, you know, rotating guys in, you know, it's exactly what Brian said. You know, in a lot of these packages, guys are gonna rotate around. There's no one guy who's set in stone. It depends, you know, on you know, what front you're running, what sub, you know, if you have a sub package in there. That's all dictated on personnel and the packages that are called. So, no, I wouldn't take a risk on him. I wouldn't take a chance on him. But if they did, you know, we'd see how it worked out and go from there.
Yeah, I definitely.
If I may address some of those concerns. So you mentioned the film from last year. His last season is why he's available and why he's a risk that we're even allowed to consider here. He was not good. It was probably his last two seasons are probably his worst as a professional. Reports last year that he was out of shape, a little overweight. He was late to meetings, all those things. That's why he's available. So we'll get that clear on the record. We're all on the same page as far as that's concerned. But as far as the tape, I would challenge you to go look at his tape from 2015 or some of those other really good years that he had, and I don't know, kind of average it out a little bit. Because there's no way he would come here and play as poorly as he did last year. He probably won't come and play at the same level he did when he was a Pro Bowler, but I would bet that we'd see something closer to his Pro Bowl years. And at least technique wise, I would bet that you could go look back and not see the same things that you saw last year. Last year, like, you go look at Jets fans' reactions to him being cut, and they're all happy about it because what he's done the last couple of years. But before that, they had given him a huge contract, and they gave him that huge contract for a reason. Now he's been cut. That could be his wake-up call. And you say it's not a risk worth taking. I think it's the exact kind of risk that we need to take. Martellus Bennett last year, I also think, was the exact kind of risk that we needed to take. I still think that, you know, without using hindsight, obviously, if you look back and you can see what he's going to do in the future, you don't sign him. But I think it was a good signing at the time. He's a very talented player, and he had just come off of a very good season. And Ted Thompson took a risk and tried to win a Super Bowl by signing a risky player, and it didn't work. It's not always going to work, but you look at. And I hate this freaking phrase, this term, but the Patriot way. They take risks on guys like this every single year. And they are in the playoffs. They are in the Super Bowl hunt every single year because they just have loads of talent that they took risks on that they didn't have to pay as much because they were taking that risk. And they end up kind of going back to their career normals instead of, you know, the negative play they had done the past couple of years or the negative locker room influence they'd done the last couple of years. You kind of need that. You need a couple jerks, a couple asses, a couple guys that you're taking a risk on in order to win a Super Bowl these days, I believe. You know, you look at it last time, it's easy to look very recently and look at Martellus Bennett, but go look back at our Super Bowl year. We had Charles Woodson. He was that risk that year. He was poison to that locker room. He was big-headed. He was full of himself. He wasn't producing the way he was a couple years prior to being a free agent. And then free agency hit him, and he had this wake-up call. And he got into a couple fights in training camp, and he had a wake-up call. And all of a sudden, he's a Packer legend. Now, I'm not saying that signing Muhammad Wilkerson is signing the next Charles Woodson, but it's very likely not going to be the next Martellus Bennett. You have to take these risks from time to time, I believe, Bennett was one last year and it didn't work out, and everybody has those. But you know, for every one or two that happens the negative way, there's one or two that work out perfectly. And I believe that Muhammad Wilkerson could be that.
The price has to be right, though. I mean, we can't just open up the bank for this guy. I mean, you look at very recent memory in the NFL. I mean, you have a guy like Joe Hayden, who is considered one of the best cornerbacks in football. And we kind of shared these same things about Muhammad Wilkerson, where it's like he's playing for an absolute terrible organization and team in the Jets, and you kind of lose your luster sometimes playing for just a team that cannot win a game, and it's just over and over repeated losing. It kind of plays with your psyche, and then you see a guy like Joe Hayden in a similar situation in Cleveland. You know, you think like, hey, he's done there. He goes to Pittsburgh, and we're like, all right, Joe Hayden's going to take off now. He's going to be back. And he never comes out of it. Like, he's still a broken cornerback. And something like that scares me, where it's like, all right, so what's going on with Joe Hayden? Muhammad Wilkerson is almost the same talent, but on the, you know, just the front seven aspect of the ball. And, you know, if you get what he was in the past, like, whatever, I don't know what an appropriate dollar amount is going to be for it to be a good money value on this deal. But, you know, I want to say maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of like $3-4 million a year. I don't know. I think that'd be good for both sides.
I would guess somewhere between $3 and $5 million on a 1-year deal is what he would get.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. I mean, I would love that. You know, it's just, we can't open up the bank for this. I mean, I know that it would be exciting to add depth to our position, our front seven, because I mean, depth has hurt the Packers too many times. And
right.
anytime you can secure some depth to your team, I am all about it. So, dudes,
I'll clarify that my excitement at the idea of bringing him in is contingent on him being affordable. Like, If tomorrow the news breaks that Muhammad Wilkerson signed a 3-year, $30 million contract with like $17 million guaranteed, I'm not going to be overly happy about that. Like, I'll kind of take it in stride because we'd still be adding a good player, but that would be a ridiculous overpayment.
It would make you question. So, this is going to show us what Goody Kunst has right now.
Yeah,
what kind of deal he can pull off with Wilkerson, because I think we all want to see him in Green Bay. It's just, you know, the price has to be right. So we'll see what Goody Kunst brings to the table here. I think this is his first big test as a GM, and I think we all have our eyes on this situation. So, hey, no better place to find out about this news than Pack to the Future. We are Pack to the Future. We have final thoughts coming for you. It's Brian Fonferra's turn to go. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen, Brian Fonferra's final thoughts.
Guys, I only have one this week, and it's that Hercules himself, Ed Hockley, everybody's favorite NFL referee, the man who over-explains everything and points with his tight t-shirts way too often. Way more than he needs to, just going off for the cameras, 60-something years old and is in better shape than I am. Everybody's favorite ref is retiring.
Will there ever be a bigger hunk ref than Ed Hercules?
No, I can't imagine that there would. From what I understand, his son is replacing him, so I'll be interested to see what his son looks like, but I can't imagine that Hercules like gave birth to Hercules. Like, I can't imagine that his son will carry on the mantle quite the same way. So I don't
know. He's gotta roll it up real quick.
Pouring one out for our homie lost tonight. Right off into the sweet sunset. Hey,
I actually saw that today and I was definitely sad. I'm like, I love when I turn a game on, because I don't look at who's reffing the Packers games. I'm like, I'm more concerned about the X's and O's and who's not playing, who's playing. And then, you know, I turn a game on and, you know, the coin toss, you see Hercules and you're like, all right, little eye candy to watch today. All right,
watch him flip the coin 30 yards into the air because he doesn't know his own strength. He can't flip it any less than that. it rotates no fewer than 175 times. It's, oh man.
Oh my God. The coin dissipates when it hits.
It hits the ground. Oh. It's dented in the shape of his thumb. It's just. NFL football is never going to be the same without him. He's been doing this for 28 years. So that means I was alive for one. I'm not even sure of that because I was born in January. So I might have been alive for like one Super Bowl of a season that he wasn't an NFL official. But he's been an NFL official almost my entire life.
I feel like we could have done a whole Ed Hercules podcast tonight. I wish we would have just done it, you know. Forget everything we said tonight and just talk about Hercules for 2 hours.
John, I hear you, but that's something that I think we need to really put a lot of time and thought into. To do it tonight would have felt rushed, and it's not a tribute befitting the man. So I think it's something that we should plan for the rest of the summer and do in August so we can just go full in.
Yeah, we don't want to pull an ESPN and release a story too soon or anything like that, right? So just we need to make sure that he's actually done and like get the back straight.
Because according to ESPN, the FBI was listening in on Ed Hockley's phone line and he was talking about paying players or something. So, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I don't know the
something
deeds,
like that.
We are Pack to the Future. We're gonna hold up on things like that right now. We are Pack to the Future.
So we will have to come up with some kind of tribute for Edward Hercules in the near future. But that's my only final thought for today, guys. If you have any other questions you want us to answer, we'll be doing another show next week, I'm sure. You can send us your questions with the hashtag AskPTTF, and you can find our account on Twitter at PTTF_podcast. You can find me at PTTF_Brian.
Ben, are you familiar with our final thoughts segment?
A little bit. I'm a little bit familiar with Ed Hockley, though. I don't call them biceps. I call them titanium floaties.
Titanium floaties.
But you know, as great as Ed Hockley is, you know, the man with the chiseled jaw and whatnot, look up, if you have time, look up Mike DeFee, DeFee. He's an official in the Big 12, and he officiated the Alabama-Clemson national championship game. And he almost gave Ed Hockley a run for his money when it comes to biceps. He's probably got like 21-inch pythons on him. I mean, he's jacked.
He's pushing Brahma Bull range right there. That's solid. That's real solid. But do you have any final thoughts, Ben, for our final thoughts segment? Anything cool happen in Oklahoma?
It's windy. It's always windy here because we say that Texas sucks and Kansas blows, and so it's always windy here. There's a lot of dirt. It hasn't rained since October. I have not seen rain since October.
Thanks.
Holy cripes.
Yeah, it's awful. Skiing. A little break from our see some moisture up there because I'm not sure what it looks like anymore. So, but you know, it was great to be on though with you guys. I've always wanted to be a part of this. It's cool. I listen to you guys all the time. You know, I love writing for the site. You know, we got a lot of really cool draft stuff. You know, this is my first year doing the draft, so I'm still, you know, kind of getting my feet wet. But I've had a lot of fun so far, and there's a lot of like great draft guys out there, like analysts. I'm not one of them at all, but I follow a lot of their stuff. They do a great job. Mostly, what I'm into mostly is just I watch tons and tons of tape and Packers tape, and just try to give people an idea of the scheme and what they're doing behind it. You know, especially like this last the last time I was on here, like back in November or whatever we said, and, you know, I was making the case for Dom Capers, sadly, but, you know, I went through and any like free time I had, I went through and I would read his playbook and I'd read it over and over and over and for like 2 or 3 years. And I almost had it. I was close to having it memorized. It took about 2 or 3 years. So I try to just take some of that and watch the Packers film and try to give people an idea of what's going on. And I kind of hope to do the same thing with Mike Pettine. He has a lot more film on though, which is good. So, but anyway, you know, it was fun. I enjoyed talking to you guys. I feel like I've known you for a long time, even though it's only been like a year.
That's how I feel, and I pretty much just started talking to you, and it's like we're kindred spirits or something. Really good vibes between us. Really good vibes.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm definitely.
No, it was awesome having you on. And honestly, you said that you're just kind of new to this, and I am shocked to hear that, because if it was me as an outsider's perspective, I would say you've been, you know, looking into this stuff for a very long time. You brought some amazing insight tonight, and I mean, I know we pretty much exclusively talked about linebackers, but I'm gonna be hitting you up on you know, other guys across the board that you see, maybe as some sleepers or things like that. Just keep pumping out some stuff, dude. I love the writing, and you brought some amazing stuff to the table tonight. We appreciate having you on.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I wish we could do something like this more. No, I had a blast though.
We love when we can get other people on, not named Jordan. And it's just been, it reminds us why we do this. And then Jordan comes back on and it's like, all right.
You know, I've never met him before. I've never talked to him.
Don't
anything,
meet him.
But
yeah.
He has a best beard, hands down, at Pack of the Future.
Easily.
There's a lot
he's
of good
the best beard
here.
And the best voice. Can't take either of those things away from him.
Jordan does have a lot going on for him. He's got a lot going on. The beer and the voice, he's got a face for radio and a voice for radio too. It's pretty phenomenal. Very phenomenal. But yeah, Ben, it was awesome having you on, and we look forward to the next time you can join us. And where are you at on Twitter, just so that other people can hit you up for all your content and stuff?
Right. The account I've been using mostly is my Packers film account, which is at PTTF_chalktalk. And my personal Twitter account is at BenClub32. So on my Packers account, I put a lot of film clips. I put some stuff from playbooks. I get on the whiteboard every now and then and draw some stuff up. And I try to pump out a lot of clips in a day. And it's not limited to just the Packers. Sometimes I like to look at other schemes or at the draft right now, but most of it, like 90% of it, is just going to be all over the Packers. So check it out.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Ben. We look forward to next time we got you on. And ladies and gents, I got one final thought for you. And that is this. If you are on Fortnite and you're on an Xbox One, and you do not add me and we do not play squad at some point, consider us not friends. That's it. I am on Xbox.
Have you won a game yet?
I have won 3 games.
Oh.
Three.
Nice.
Three.
I have 2 second place finishes, and I'm very proud of that. That's about as good as I can get.
3 wins. You're pretty much talking to Ninja right here. For all of you, for all of you Fortnite people. You are talking to pretty much the next Ninja. So my gamer tag on Xbox is at Freelo Fortunaire. There's a story to that, but I'm not going to get into it right now.
That's another podcast.
It's a whole other podcast. It's a 3-part podcast that will blow your guys' minds. But that's Frilo Fortunaire. Find me. Add me. Let's game. I love Fortnite so much. It's amazing. You guys are amazing. Packers are about to make some amazing news. They're about to make some amazing decisions. It's time to see what Goody Coons has. We'll see what he can do with Wilkerson. We'll see what he does in the draft. Guys, huge weeks coming up for the Packers. You know where to get the content. You know who brings it each and every week. It's Pack to the Future. Don't look anywhere else. You know where to look. We are Pack to the Future. Never forget that. We are Pack to the Future. Go Pack Go. See you next week. We're Pack to the Future. See ya. Bye.